Welcome to Quimper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy the reading and sermon from our November 1st service. Joseph Bednarik's sermon is entitled Galactic Gardens of Memory. Thanks for listening.
So at this time of year in the Northern Hemisphere, the air is really pungent with leafy decay. The light gets ever more precious. We attend to those final harvests of garden and farm. And we witness the flora and the fauna begin to prepare for winter. And what's interesting to consider during these times of transition in our part of the world, that we humans have created holidays, both religious and secular, that suggest in no uncertain terms that the veils between the realms of the living and the dead are thinning. Spirits rise, ghosts haunt, goblins taunt, identity becomes fluid, faces are masked, graves empty, and living wonder through the lengthening nights what it must be like to give up the ghost. Now consider these holidays that have occurred, are occurring, and will occur over yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Halloween, Day of the Dead, All Souls' Day, and All Saints' Day. Now, in honor of these holidays, these holy days, this morning we created our own ritual that engaged that thinning veil by celebrating the memories of loved ones, those who have passed from the world of the quick to the world of the dead. Now here at the front of the sanctuary is an altar that contains photographs and flowers, stones and mementos of our loved ones and our ancestors. And what we shared in our silence was holy. And what we created together was memorial art at its finest. It's inflamed, it's gorgeous, it's temporal, and it's created in community with opened and loving hearts at the far edge of a universe that's filled with 90 billion galaxies. We've created our own little galaxy here. Now, the dour existentialists among us will tell us that compared to the vastness of the universe, this altar is nothing. And they are correct, technically. And yet, technically, this nothing altar is a universe unto itself, as it contains everything that our lives are. Love and anguish, joy and sorrow, tender loving care, and deep memories. There is nothing more important and holy at this very moment than this altar. We have co-created a holy presence within a room that we claim as sanctuary, a sanctuary where our dead are remembered and the living supported and loved, which is a fine place to be in a mostly empty universe filled with 90 billion galaxies. When I told a poet friend of mine that I was going to be co-creating a service in honor of the dead, he sent me a poem that he always reads at funerals. And so I'd like to close out our ritual with this poem, entitled Dear Men and Women by John Hall Wheelock. It's a little longer than the poems I usually read. Just hang in there. In the quiet before cockcrow, when the cricket's mandolin falters, when the light of the past falling from the high stars yet haunts the earth, and the east quickens, I think of those I love, dear men and women, no longer with us. And not in grief or regret merely, but rather with a love that is almost joy, I think of them, of whom I am a part as they of me, and through whom I am made more wholly one with the pain and the glory, the heartbreak at the heart of things. I have learned it from them at last, who am now grown old, a happy man, that the nature of things is tragic and meaningful beyond words, that to have lived, even if once, only once and no more, will have been, oh, how truly worth it. The years go by. March flows into April. The sycamore's delicate tracery puts on its tender green. April is August soon. Autumn and the raving of insect choirs, the thud of apples in moonlit orchards. To winter brings the silent, windy light again on shining Manhattan, her towering stone and glass, and age deepens. Oh, much is taken, but one dearer than all remains, and life is sweet still to the now enlightened spirit. Doors are opened that never before were opened. New ways stand open, but quietly one door closes, the door to the future. There it is written, thus far and no farther. There, as at Eden's gate, the angel with the fiery sword. The Eden that we dream of, the Eden that lies before us, the unattainable dream soon lies behind. Eden is always yesterday or tomorrow. There is no way back now, but back, back to the past. The past has become a paradise. And there they dwell, these ineffable presences, safe beyond time, rescued from death and change. Though all be taken, they only shall not be taken. Immortal, unaging, unaltered, faithful yet to that lost dream world they inhabit. Truly, to me, they may come no more, but I to them in revelry and remembrance still may return. In me they still live on. In me they shall have their being till we together darken in the great memory. Dear eyes of delight, dear youthful tresses, foreheads furrowed with age, dear hands of love and care, lying awake at dawn, I remember them with a love that is almost joy. I remember them, lost, and all mine, forever. So my addition to this altar include photographs of my grandparents, antique portraits of people I do not know, and a provocative clock sculpture that I really admire. Now, regarding the antique portraits, in some mathematical realm, they are my distant cousins, as is everyone in this room. But they can also be my great-great-great-grandparents. Probably not, but nobody can prove it otherwise. See, my actual family tree goes back only so far, and once you get to that third or fourth great, we go out into the old country, and there's nothing to grab onto. As a result, I tend to buy those antique portraits when I find them in thrift stores and at estate sales. Not only to see those extravagant clothes and the dapper hairstyles, but to look into the faces and imagine their lives, to ask whether they are my blood, and to think about loved ones, their loved ones, who gazed upon those portraits and found great comfort in them. And also, in a deep way, to care for the orphaned dead, to bring them back into the fold of a loving family. Now, as fanciful as that may sound, and the cynics among us might go so far as to call it pointless and absurd, consider the theological depth. These orphaned dead belong to my divine family, to our divine family. The universalist vein in our religion asserts that these anonymous strangers, who may or may not be my great-great-great-great-grandparents by blood, are in fact my great-great-great-great-grandparents by spirit. They represent all of our divine ancestors, human beings who walked the planet, who breathed the air, who marveled at the stars, and made love with abandon, sparking divinity into human form. And they howled in grief when their loved ones died. And someone four generations back howled in grief when they died. And now that they're all forgotten, except for a few antique portraits bought at a thrift store. Now my beloved grandparents will come to the same end, especially my grandfather, because when his three grandchildren die, there will be nobody left on the planet who ever laid eyes on him, who ever felt his strong hands, who ever watched him fall asleep to the evening news and then come wide awake when Archie Bunker came on. Now, he left no lasting mark, per se, like a piece of art or a vast fortune or a plaque with his name on it. The mark that he left is standing before you. Now, my guess is that's the way for most of us in this room, that we are the legacies, almost the sole legacies, of our bloodlines. And thus, this morning, we legacies light candles and place stones and tend to some deep memories to make a mark, this mark, however brief and beautiful, for those who have gone before us. Now, my other addition to this sculpture or to this altar is a piece of sculpture called Blood Red Ticking. And I encourage you all to come up after the service and take a look at it. It's the green clock. Now, this ticking clock, it absolutely does not tell you what time it is, but it tells you in no uncertain terms that time is moving and you, my friend, are moving along with it. The clock has only one hand, a bright red second hand, and it does not sweep smoothly and quietly. Rather, it tick, 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 ticks along, like the blood red heart that's in the middle of your chest that's tick, 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 ticking along. Now, while I'm soothed by that deep green circular frame around the clock, I like to think about that, about infinity. The face of the clock is sort of horrifying, one of those orderly mosaics of black and white faces, 88 black and white faces taken from some yearbook in the 1950s. And I will let the numerologists in the room figure out why there are 88 faces, but I like to think of it as two infinity signs standing on end and saluting time. Because infinity is made up of an infinity of seconds. And speaking of infinity and seconds, a few weeks ago, a friend of mine died of a rare lung disease. Linda lay in the hospital being kept alive because a ventilator forced air into her lungs. And finally, she said enough. She refused intubation. Technicians removed the tube, and everybody knew what was to come. Tick, 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 tick. Her family was bedside. She said her goodbyes, and her obituary reads, quote, "She died calmly and without pain." Today actually is her memorial service in Livingston, Montana. I had been invited to go to that service, but I felt called to be at this service and have chosen to celebrate her memory with you today. So in honor of Linda, who died of lung disease, I ask that we all take a sweet, slow, luxurious breath in and feel our gorgeous and glorious lungs doing the work that they've always done for us. To feel that oxygen-rich air of this sanctuary commingle with your bright blood being pumped by a faithful heart and feeding every cell in your body. Consider this. When you breathe in, you literally inspire. You take in spirit. And religions around the world make breathing holy. God is called the breath of life. Zen masters teach their students to follow their breath. And one of the five principles of yoga is pranayama, proper breathing. It is a miracle, this breathing. We rarely give it a second thought. And truth be told, we rarely give it a first thought. We're still. We never thank our lungs for doing what must be done every moment of our lives since we hollered our way into this vast and empty universe. That first cry of ours that made our parents weep for joy. Oh, the lungs work. Listen to those lungs. Cry, baby, cry. We gotcha. Now, the rule of three regarding survival says that air is the first priority. You can survive 3 minutes without air. In essence, you can survive 3 minutes without inspiration. Now, the corollary is, of course, that you can survive a lifetime with air. And we here are enjoying our lifetime of air and our lifetime of working lungs together here and now. And so there she was, Linda, a proud woman of 74 years who planted probably no fewer than 64 gardens, facing the final precious breaths of her lifetime on this planet. Each and every person gathered around the hospital bed was breathing, wanting desperately to gift her some of their breath. Now, I did not know Linda to be a religious person or to practice any spiritual tradition per se, other than the most ancient spiritual traditions, growing food, cooking food, and living with a fierce dedication to create beauty, which we all know is truth. And in a weird symmetry that is our life on this planet, hours after the death of my friend in Montana, I held a warm lung in my hands. My wife and I had bought half of a pig, and we decided to help with the slaughter and the butchering. Now, I know you're wondering, what is the segue here between the death of a beautiful woman and the slaughter of a pig? Hang with me. Now, I had never done this before, and I thought that it was a good idea to get closer to my food, to be as close as possible to the myriad deaths, animal and vegetable, that buoy my life. And so it was on a Saturday morning in early October, I joined a few people in Chimicum, and we killed a pig. Bullet to the brain, jugular cut, and we watched the blood pump out onto the bare earth. And one among us was a bit sad that we weren't collecting the blood for sausage that morning. Now, before the farmer shot the pig, he turned to me and he said, "Hey, Joseph, I hear that you're good with words. Do you want to say anything? We were seven people standing outside the pen, most of us strangers to each other, about to take the life of a fellow creature. His request ricocheted around in my head. Say anything, say anything, say anything, say anything. The farmer was cradling his gun, and I was both flummoxed by and thankful for the opportunity. Only thanks, I said. Thank you, pig. Everyone present turned to the pig and said thank you. Now, a few minutes later, we were hoisting the dead weight of his body into the back of a pickup truck, and a few hours later, I was elbow deep in the carcass pulling out organs. Now, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I harbored in my head the notion that lungs were like, you know, kids' balloons, or that they were mostly empty space, that they were a cavity that just filled and emptied, that filled and emptied. Now, when I pulled the lungs out of the pig, I expected to see something like a collapsed, shriveled balloon. But, of course, I was astonished to see them full form in the shape of a lung and to feel that they were like a sponge. Of course, I thought. A miraculous sponge where air and blood spend a lifetime in their dance of life. Lungs, quite literally, sponge up our lives. Now, Linda's husband is a poet, and he has a short poem called Galactic. It's the poem that I reached for and shared with friends when I heard that Linda had died. The husband wrote this poem when he himself was recuperating from back surgery and not feeling very well. Galactic. Sitting out in my chair near Linda's garden, a mixture of flowers and vegetables, pink iris, wild poppies, roses, blue salvia, and veronica, among tomatoes, green beans, eggplant, and onion, I think that I sense the far-flung galaxies and hear a tinge of the solar winds. Where is my dead brother? I want to know. With so many infirmities, I await the miraculous. Galaxies are grand thickets of stars in which we may hide forever. Now, there is so much to love about this poem. First and foremost, the link between gardens and galaxies. Second, the fact that Linda's garden provides beauty and food, bright, colorful flowers, rich flavors, and vital nutrition. And then, of course, the question about the dead. Where is my dead brother? I want to know. And the first and obvious answer is that he is in the poem, a piece of art composed at the edge of a garden, a piece of breath at the edge of the galaxy. Galaxies are grand thickets of stars in which we may hide forever, the poet says. And this morning, with our altar, we call down our dead from their starry thicket of galactic hiding. In this season, where the veils between the living and the dead are thinning, we called home our dead into this sanctuary, this holy place, where we inspire, where we tune our hearing to the blood-red ticking, where we are moved to co-create this living, breathing, spiritual home and feel the heartbreak at the heart of things with a love that is almost joy. Amen.
Thank you.
The previous musical selection is entitled After, composed and performed by Evan Millman.